Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 253, recorded on May 8th, 2015. Enjoy! All right, then it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and with me, as always, is Jeff Gamet from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how you doing?
I'm doing good. Hey, did I have my Apple Watch yet last week?
You did.
I must have just gotten it like hours before.
Yeah.
Awesome. I have an Apple Watch.
Yay.
Yay.
And Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. How are you doing, Adam?
Good. I just realized I probably should put my Apple Watch in silent mode. You don't have to listen to it the whole show.
Mine's always on silent. I had it.
I hope mine dings throughout the show, so it makes it sound like I'm important.
Yeah,
I like the sounds. I have been running them off because they can get annoying, but they're actually kind of nice.
Yeah, they are. I turned them on last weekend or something like that to just see what they were like, and I was pleasantly surprised at how nice they were. But I leave them off. Makes me happy.
I think everybody does.
Yeah, I mean, just the Taptic engine just works so nicely.
I'm leaving the sounds on for now, but that's because I'm working on a review, and I want to know what it's like to do all the things with a watch.
All the things, yes. The show is sponsored this week by Lynda at lynda.com/TIOSS. We'll talk more about them and their wonderful training videos later on, and also NatureBox. At naturebox.com/TIOSS, they have some delicious snacks for you to get for free, and we'll talk about them later on as well. So with that...
I just had a Taptic notification come in when I was fiddling with the digital crown. That's a weird experience.
Was it... Did you hit the top or the bottom of a list, or was it something else?
No. I've done that, but... I don't know. It was weird. I guess it does kind of vibrate. The crown does kind of vibrate when you do that as well.
The one thing that I was a bit upset with, or not really upset, I was just kind of, yeah, whatever. When Kevin Lynch presented it the first or the second time, he was talking about the Taptic engine and how it was very discreet in that you would know it was happening, but the person next to you wouldn't be able to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
And I can hear it. I can hear it.
You can hear it?
Yeah.
What are you, a ferret?
Maybe. I've asked my lady multiple times if she can hear it when it goes off, and she's like, I have no idea, but she has better eyesight than I was on
Mac break, and I had an argument with Leo because he basically said it's not any different than a vibration, you know, like the vibration on an iPhone or anything like that.
Oh, it's totally different.
Yeah.
I can hear even after a week, it's still disturbing because it feels like something is coming out of the bottom of my watch and poking at my arm.
I don't know about that.
I don't get that much of a sensation, but I definitely get a different feel than just a random sort of buzzing vibration that I get from my phone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get the vibrating part, but it feels like whatever's vibrating is on the end of a little rod and it goes, yeah, boom,
I described it more.
Pops me in the arm.
Like kind of the best word I have for it is like a kind of a thunking feeling. Like,
yeah, kind thunk, of a thunky thunk, thing.
Thunk. It's like, it's a little bit heavier than just a straight sort of buzz. It's got a little more weight to it. If that makes any sense at all.
Yeah.
It's still very subtle.
It's just one of those things that, you know, like the phantom vibration from the phone. I get that with the watch, too. I'm not sure. I think it's twofold. One, I think it's happening when it's simply not. And two, if I'm, like, driving or doing something where my watch can maybe jiggle about slightly, I feel like it's happening more often than it's not.
Hmm.
So people say that you need to get used to it and your wrist will become more sensitive. And I go between latching it at like the third button from the end to the fourth button to the end. So either tighter or looser. And maybe it just needs to be a little bit tighter, but
we might have a similar wrist size because I do the fourth notch from the end. It's right where I'm at, where it's comfortable, where it's not sliding around, but it's
on the small medium.
Snug enough. Yeah.
Yeah.
On the what?
The small medium band.
No. You have that tiny of a wrist?
I guess.
Wow.
That's dainty.
That's really wrists. Dainty. Huh. I thought I had a small wrist, and I'm using the larger band. And I could put it on the third from the end hole, I put it on the second from the end hole. So it's kind of loose.
Oh, you're saying from the end?
From the watch.
From the watch side. Yeah that's what I was saying. I'm on the fourth hole from the watch side. I know this makes entertaining.
I know it's super.
Right
now. Yeah, it's wonderful.
I'm talking about on the tail end.
Right.
Okay. All right. But so speaking of the watch, of course, Apple seems to be preparing to allow in-store pickup of orders very soon. That's now a grayed out option, whereas before it was not at all an option. It says available soon at the Apple
Store. Is that still the case? Because that was earlier this week when that started showing up, right? So they're still not.
I don't know. I haven't seen any sort of updates about it. And I think
checked it.
I think to actually make it happen, to actually check, you have to like sign in and almost press the giant go button.
Well, I'll do it. I'm
okay,
going to do it right
go.
Now.
Yeah, I'm in there. It says pickup. Personal pickup is currently unavailable. So, but it's there. It's a little grayed out radio button. So.
All right. Soon. Well, that's cool.
Soon. And for what it's worth, in case you don't understand, or you're worried that, oh, I haven't gotten my watch yet, and they're going to start allowing people to pick them up in the stores, don't worry. It's going to be, you go and order this thing and check the pickup option, and it'll say, okay, you're good to go in like 20 days or whatever, and we'll let you know when it's at the store for you. So the only difference is that you don't have to wait around for UPS to drop it at your house. You can just go to the Apple Store to pick it up when it does ship.
Well, and then you'll probably get that whole onboarding experience, too, where they'll, like, you want take it out of the box
personal
for
setup.
You, help you pair it to your phone, help you set it up.
Yeah.
Right?
Which is nice.
Have you guys seen the prices for these things, the resale street value? People are paying a lot of money for these still because they're few and far between.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, I haven't looked in the last week, but last week it was nutty. I saw I think it was like three times the price, two and a half times the price of for the same model I got. People were buying them for on eBay and selling them on Craigslist and that sort of thing. Pretty crazy. I haven't seen any
of
it in the wild.
Maybe it's time for me to sell mine and upgrade to the stainless space black one.
Yeah. Those are nice. Does your wife want it yet? Has she decided that she just wants it off your wrist right now?
No, but I mean, if I can sell mine for three times the price, that almost gets me to covering the cost of that one.
Yeah, look into
it. Free upgrade.
You'd want to probably act sooner rather than later, but...
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, like I said before, I had a friend who ordered his 6 minutes after it went on sale, and I mean, he's still waiting on his... Still in processing. So
I'm not gonna wow. do it. But.
So, so cool. Cool news about Apple Watch bands. So I think this is on the same day or one day, and then one day later on Monday we saw that classic and modern buckle bands will allow for you to easily put third-party bands on your watch because the bands themselves interface with it, the little locking mechanism just via two screws that pop out and then you can pull the little bar off and then put whatever band you want on there, and it's a pretty standard interface, although that's a pretty expensive interface for if you just want to use the third-party bands, because it's what, $150 or something.
Yep.
Yeah.
You buy the band for $150, and then you also need to go over to iFixit and get
a Pentalobe.
Your Pentalobe screwdriver, yeah.
Yeah. And then interestingly, I'm not sure if this was in response to that or if it was just something planned. It probably was just planned that Apple has put out a guideline. There's a new developer site for creating bands. Bands and lugs, I guess. So the lug is the actual thing that slides in, right? Mm-hmm. And then the band, I guess you would say, is the whole assembly, lug and band kind of thing.
So no battery charger bands.
Did they say that? I don't think they did. I think they said
they said no magnetic ones.
Yes. And I looked earlier today to see if there was any guidance on whether or not a developer could utilize the secret port, and there was no mention of the port at all.
Yeah, I think the port is off limits. And also, how are you going to get into the port?
That I still have not gotten a clear picture on how you get into that port.
Yeah, iFixit doesn't have a clear picture, and they dissected the whole thing, and they're
they
can't figure out how this opens.
Yeah, they said only from the inside, really.
And they basically had to pry it out from the inside.
Maybe you read a little bit more, but I get the impression that they use some kind of fine tweezers to pull the cover off from the outside.
No. They yanked it out from the inside. And it was after they finally just gave up on trying to figure out how it worked, and they took their tweezers and just tried it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you got to wonder, there's got to be a way, a special magical Apple mechanism that once you realize how it works, it's going to be a super doy kind of moment, but it's got to be some kind of magical thing that in order for them to access it at the Genius Bar, you'd think they would have that, right? Some kind of thing that,
well, we're assuming this is something the Genius Bar is going to be able to access.
Well, why the heck would they put it on every single, I don't know, you know what I mean? It just doesn't seem like,
you know, it could be that at one point when they were fairly far along in the machining design process, they had planned to do something with that little port space and then opted not to. And so it was less expensive to make the little cover that goes there than retool everything.
Yeah, you gotta think.
There is that weird thing, though. I mean, why have the little hole there then that looks like the little SIM ejector hole?
Yeah, I agree.
I think that at this point in the game, it's too early to say because there aren't that many out there yet. And of course, not that many people who would be so adventurous to figure it out.
Hey, Michael, start jabbing at that little hole in your watch. Let's see what happens.
That's the thing is, I think by now, if you could open it from the outside, someone would have figured out that engineering.
I think it involves magnets.
But I mean, so how hard is that? Get a couple of neodymium magnets and...
Well, I have
slide them around that area.
See, I tried that. So I have buckyballs, but they're too big to fit in that slot.
I have super strong, thin round ones that would probably slide right in there.
Oh yeah, I think I might have some of those. Some like from a name tag kind of deal.
No, I just bought them online.
Oh, okay. The little,
I just buy those sorts of things.
Little,
you know,
wafers.
This is why you're cool, Adam.
Yeah.
No, I was doing some projects and we needed some super strong magnets, so I ordered a bunch of different kinds of them.
Yeah, just
I think we were trying to actually build a hoverboard.
A tiny
That's awesome.
For a mouse or something?
Yeah. There was do we want to go into this? There was a video on YouTube of some guy who had supposedly built a system, and it used like one of those sort of weird round antennas that you would use for like your stereo, and then some neodymium magnets and like some foam core board and stuff like that. So we were going to see if we could like actually replicate it and if it was like a real thing.
You know, you can actually, if you heard about the EM drive, the one that just uses a microwave basically and creates thrust. It's a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
They've been working on that. Supposedly it works. Sounds kind of like that, but you can build your own. They have the schematics out there. Hey, if you want to build your own, just, you know, tear apart your microwave and throw it in a metal box, and then you got a spaceship.
Yeah, no thanks.
Sweet.
No thanks. That sounds awesome. they have the... I'm not entirely clear on the spec. Is Apple planning to provide the lugs for the bands? Is it?
Yes. That was in the documentation. Yeah, you've got to buy the lugs from Apple.
Oh, you can't create your own lugs?
No.
Huh.
Well, at least you'll know the lugs work.
I mean, it makes sense because the tolerance is there. They want to keep them tight. They want it to not damage the watch.
They had some very specific requirements on the lugs. I'll go back as we're talking and give you some more of the details, but they also need to be covered. Like if you look at the lug, if you were to slide your band out, I was just doing this, and look at the lug in the middle, the one that is the catch mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's metal on the bottom and it's kind of like rubberized on the top.
Yeah.
And you can even like push the little top button in and you can see how the mechanism works, like when it slides through. I think the ones to the left or right are not necessarily functional. I think they're just there to kind of
some kind of support.
Give a buffer or support. Yeah, exactly.
Structural thing.
Yeah. And so there were some specifications about what the lugs should be made of.
So clarify for me, what is the lug? Is that the entire thing that slides into the watch?
I think it's just that thing in the middle. I think it's just that little mechanism thing in the middle.
Okay, so that's it's basically the locking mechanism.
It's the latching part, yeah. And my guess is that it needs to be metal on the bottom, that it's magnetic, that it gets sucked down into, because if you look in your watch, right, there's a little divot there. And when you push on the button on the outside of the watch, it sort of makes that flush, which would, you know, push the lug up so that you can slide it out. But my guess is that when you slide it in, that gets magnetized, pulled down into that, you know, into that little channel, right?
I don't think there's any magnetization that happens there. I think it's simply that once you slide it into a certain point, that piece is being
pressed.
What's
going to cause it to drop down? Like, the fact that
it's just spring loaded
down on the top of it.
Yeah, it's just spring loaded.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So once, and then that's exactly why it comes out too, so that you have a higher spring force when you press in on that button to release it, and then that presses it down, you can pull it out.
And now I remember, it wasn't the lugs, I think, the lug is provided by Apple. I believe that what they were specifying is, however you have the connector, so if you have more of a connector that's like on the classic buckles, they had recommendations for materials, and it was like vinyl.
Okay.
Stainless steel or some other kind of plastic.
Okay, so I'm looking at it right now. The lug is really just the little button locking mechanism thing.
And you're going to have to get those from Apple if you want to be an Apple certified watch band. And I'm sure Apple's going to take a nice, you know, little cut of that.
That makes perfect sense, though, because
profit center.
That's a really precise device.
Being Apple.
Well, it's also a precise thing that you want to make sure the spring constants are right.
Yeah, I know. I get it. But here's the thing: is you're going to hear everybody moaning that, well, Android doesn't have
proprietary. They're going to suck it up and realize that it's Apple
connectors that you have to, like, Apple's now engineered a way to make money off the connector for the Apple Watch.
Well, they can shut up and go buy a cheap knockoff that's not Apple approved and just be happy.
Yeah, exactly. But you know those stories are coming, right?
Yeah, those stories suck. Nobody wants to hear those stories.
This is the FireWire connector. It's like Apple has to always take a cut and control everything.
Yeah. Okay. Right? Now, going back to the diagnostic port. So we talked about, I think, the reserve strap maybe before the watch even came out, before it was in our hands. So this was the thing that would slide into the standard watch ports, into those watch slide rail thingies, and on the bottom, on the back, it would have an inductive interface, and the strap would incorporate a battery. So a battery plus an inductive charger, which kind of seemed a bit far-fetched to me, but that's what they were going for. Now, they have gotten their hands on the watch, and they say that their engineers have determined that it is definitely possible to utilize the diagnostic port on the bottom for charging, and in fact, it is faster, and of course, it would mean that you would have no obstruction with the back for the skin sensor and all that stuff.
Yeah, well, and plus that's not allowed. You're not allowed to block the skin sensor. You're not allowed to do magnetic charging on your band now anyway, so it would be a good workaround for them.
How
are they going to get the door open to actually access those connectors?
I'm sure they're working on it. I think that's probably the biggest hurdle at this point, because they can just buy off the shelf batteries really and throw it in,
slap them on a band and away you go.
Yeah,
but the thing is, I mean, I don't know, after having used this thing for over a week now, I don't even think a battery band is necessary.
Only for people who want, I think it's for people who want the ability to have like a 2-day charge. Because how much capacity are you going to be able to fit in this band before it gets obnoxious, you know?
But I'll maintain too is you don't want a non-day level amount of time. So, I mean, if you're going to do it that way, you've got to somehow guarantee I'm going to get 2 full days out of that extra band charge.
Yeah, but then you're thinking, I charge every other day. I think it, well...
But you know what I'm saying?
I do.
Because it gets weird, because if it gives me only an extra half day charge, now I'm halfway through my second day and I've got to go find a charger.
Well, I think it maybe in that case, it would be for people who are heavy on their watch, heavy users of their watch for whatever reason.
Fitness seems to be causing some issues.
It's really interesting.
According to some reports,
you can totally tell how lazy you've been in a day just by looking at the battery life. You don't even have to look
high,
at the fitness.
You haven't been
Sitting
doing
on
workouts.
Your butt. Exactly. But honestly, I feel like my battery has gotten better since I've gotten it. I took the battery gauge off of
doinking with it less.
This is true, but I mean, it's gotten significantly better. And I think it had to do with the one day where I stopped freaking out about the fact that it was getting down to 30%. And I just let it get down as much as it wanted to. And finally, the little ring was red. And it asked me if I wanted to put it into whatever mode. And I said no. And I just let it get down. It never went to forced power reserve or anything like that. But after that, I think it calibrated itself. And the battery life is killer on it. It most definitely gets me through a day, no problem. The only thing that I would appreciate about a battery extension thing would be the potential for falling asleep with the watch on. Not purposely, just accidentally, just crawling into bed and you just don't take the watch off and then, oh, you know, my watch is dead today.
Yeah, but I mean, it also charges in an hour and a half. Goes from zero to full charge in an hour and 30 minutes.
Sure. Yeah, it's, I don't know. And the other thing, so I should mention, this is the most important part. The reserve strap is $250 and doesn't exist yet. So take that. There's that information.
I think it's a total non-starter because I just think it's not necessary for so many people.
I agree.
I wouldn't
for me, I would,
my money in.
There's no way I would buy a $250 battery extension for my watch. Maybe $50. I think $50.
I'm just saying, I feel somewhat bad for the company because I don't think they have much of a market.
Yeah, you know? I agree. I don't think they're going to be able to make a long-term success out of this.
They're going to hit obstacles from Apple everywhere along the way. And
well, perhaps they won't.
On top of that, what?
Perhaps they won't. Maybe Apple has not yet finished finalizing their spec for that port, and they're going to open it up for third parties.
I don't think Apple is interested in
charging
bands.
Yeah, God bless them for trying, but
not
they're
charging bands.
They're putting themselves into a tough business.
I think things in general. I think if you have fitness accessories, those sorts of things. But we've speculated about that a lot, and have yet to see anything from Apple. Bands are one thing. This is completely different. Okay, so we're going to talk more about stuff, but we got Linda to talk about first, and that is our first sponsor of the week. And they are they're the wonderful website where you go to learn about pretty much anything you can think of that is, software-based, skills. Here, let's see what we got here. Browsing the library. You can do 3D and animation, audio and music, business, CAD, design, development, software development, just gobs of stuff on software development. There's some education and learning stuff. Which includes like Excel, like hello, if you've ever needed to learn how to use Excel or PowerPoint or any of those things for your job. I mean, if your company doesn't already offer Lynda, this is the place to get it. And I've actually noticed that a lot of companies just kind of give Lynda away because they recognize that they're the leader of teaching this stuff. And so all of these videos are taught, they're done by the people who know it best. So it's not just one guy or five guys. They go out and they find the best person who knows about the topic. So they're, I don't know how many tons of different educators they have on there. But you can learn, here, let's see what you got. Swift Essential Training, going paperless, start to finish. You've got Income Tax Fundamentals, iPhone and iPad Security Fundamentals, Getting Started with MakerBot 3D Printers. So if you're interested in figuring out, like, hey, will the MakerBot thing, will the 3D printer thing be cool for me? Is it going to do what I think it's going to do? Go check this out. You can see what it will do for you. And then you can spend a lot of money on a 3D printer. Speeding up and maintaining your Mac, design topics, music production, video production, design, as I said before. There are terminal videos. So if you've ever wanted to learn how to use the terminal on your Mac, that is something that I keep it open all day, every day, 24/7. I have the terminal open, and it is so handy to be able to just jump in the guts and do something quick with my Mac and make my life easier. And if you want to be able to do that, just go to lynda.com and they'll teach you all about it. They have, I mean, you can get really basic or you can get down nitty gritty. All the videos, they're about 10-minute chunks, and you can, they're all like, they have chapterized stuff, so you can find exactly what you want. So maybe you know a little bit about the topic, but you want to jump to exactly the right thing. They're all transcript, smart videoized. I don't know how you'd say it, but basically you have the transcript below the video, and it highlights the words as you go, which also means you can jump right to the spot that you want by clicking on the words, or you can even search the database for the specific thing that you're thinking of, and it will search through those transcripts and take you right to the thing in the video. I mean, they have how many? They have crazy numbers of videos, 3,000 and going on-demand video courses. So you get all of that stuff, lynda.com/TIOSS. You get a free 10-day trial when you go to lynda.com/TIOSS, which is awesome. So go there, check out click the little browser library, see all the stuff that they have. I think you can get a little taste of all the different videos even before you sign up. But once you do, you get access to absolutely everything that they have. And when someone asks me, hey, I want to learn how to write some code, or I want to learn how to use Photoshop, or I want to, you know, learn how to make my own website or work with WordPress or what have you, I say, go to lynda.com. That's where you want to go. There's no question about it. There's no other place that I can think of other than spending a bunch of money and not learning as much by going to a community college. Lynda's the place. It's actually how I learned how to do everything to develop Appler. So, that's my testimonial there. I would not have been able to do Appler if it wasn't for Lynda. So check them out. They're great. lynda.com/TIOSS for a free 10-day trial. Thanks to Lynda for sponsoring the iOS show. And with that, what do we got here? Oh, so ChipWorks has torn into the S1 chip. And I guess their overwhelming response to it is, holy crap, it's really impressive. They say they've never seen anything like it before. They say it's essentially an entire motherboard on a chip. And it seems like they've, you know, with a motherboard, you have chips that consist of dies that are then kind of branched out into the contacts that go into the various systems on the motherboard and all that stuff. And it seems like they've directly integrated all the dies into this one interfacing substrate. And it's really cool. They have a diagram of some of the chips that they recognize on there. Of course, they have their Apple APU. What is an APU? Is that a standard thing?
Well, let's do a Google search.
Application processing unit. I don't know. I assume it includes both the GPU and the CPU. It almost looks like it might be dual core, but I'm no expert. I just see.
Oh, dots. Now you're going to make me get my notes out. I have all this stuff in my notes.
Oh, you do?
Yeah.
But I mean, as we talked about before, it has more power than the original iPhone, and that's pretty significant.
How about accelerated processing unit?
What's that do?
or advanced processing unit, a computer CPU that includes additional accelerators, for example, a GPU.
Okay.
So yeah, it's probably CPU and GPU combined on a single chip.
Neat. And maybe even more fun stuff. So you get to see the wireless charger, the NFC controller, and the Broadcom stuff, and the accelerometer, and just all the fun stuff.
Yeah. The APU uses older chip technology, though.
Yeah.
It's a 28 nanometer.
So is it just the APU itself or everything on it? Because I guess that would be the custom port, the custom silicon here, other than the configuration.
It's the equivalent of Apple's AX processor or whatever. So A5, A6, A7, you know, whatever you want to call it.
Totally.
In the S1, it's called the APL0778 application processor.
Gotcha.
And it's made by Samsung, and it's 28 nanometer.
And the reason that is significant is because they have way smaller processes now.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was...
It's interesting that they went with 28 nanometer. Who knows why? Maybe it was just cheaper, probably.
Probably cheaper, probably more reliable, maybe, because it's not as brand new. I don't know. I mean, at some point, you gotta put a freeze on what you're doing as you develop something and say, this is how it's going to be.
Other interesting things, the Taptic Engine is a really super small linear actuator.
Yep.
Rather than your traditional sort of, you know, buzzing thing, which is why it likely feels different. The first time Apple has put a 6-axis accelerometer gyroscope all in a single unit, which is interesting.
Yeah.
Even your iPhone doesn't have that. I think it's
brand new for the watch.
Like they're separate components. Now the gyroscope and accelerometer are 6-axis all together.
Yeah. Now the funny thing about that is it's so advanced, but it still doesn't know when I'm standing up.
No, that the problem with that thing is that you know the problem with that is a misnomer about that's a nomenclature problem that they have.
So they say stand up when they really mean go, like, don't be lazy for a few minutes, guy.
It means, yeah, it's really saying you have not moved around enough. You need to move around a little bit more.
So people
who work at standing desks are getting the you need to stand thing, and it's because it just hasn't detected any motion. You've been relatively stationary.
Yeah.
For an extended period of time.
Yeah. So they should change it to go be active for a couple minutes.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, I would say so. Or maybe just stand up, walk around, turn around or something like that. And I wonder if how much that has to do. I mean, what was Apple's intent with that exactly? Was it truly to get people to stand up, just stand up? Or was it more to get them active?
And I think it's to get people active.
Okay. Yeah. Because different people are going to have different definitions of active, right? To me, active means go for a walk or actually, like, do something.
Yeah.
I think this is more just the idea of not being sedentary for, you know, hours and hours and hours, where you literally are the only thing that's moving are your fingertips at a keyboard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, scientists have determined that's extremely, extremely unhealthy for you.
Yeah, it is.
So it's like, you know, hey, take a break, go get a cup of coffee or some water or something, you know, walk around the house for a minute. Because you only have to do it for 60 seconds. It just wants to see 60 seconds of, like, moving around.
What about, what if you did, like, some push-ups? Would it detect that? Because
then you're moving more into the exercise category because it's going to detect your heart rate going up above its normal level. And it's my understanding too that the Apple Watch will learn and adjust to your activity behavior. So all of those rings and stuff like that, it is relative to the amount of activity that it sort of learns about you as a person. So if you are super, super sedentary and you don't move around a lot, you'll be able to sort of move those bars and reach your goals quicker than someone who it detects is a really active person.
So if you're constantly running everywhere, you're going to have to really haul.
You're going to have to do more. Yeah.
Yeah. Except it'll know that you're being active.
So it'll give you those points.
So the idea is for you know, it's wanting you to sort of move to the next level.
Sure.
But it's not going to make it unrealistic where, like, the super sedentary person suddenly has to be 10 times more active.
Yeah, I
you know,
I gotcha.
The percentage, it's going to say, okay, you need to be X percent more active. And if you're really a really active person, it's going to be the same goal, you know, X percent more active.
The only thing I don't like is that the exercise ring is based upon time and not on, well, exercise-y things.
Other, what do you mean?
Other
I just
measurements.
Got the notice. Time for me to stand.
There yeah,
you
me go. Too.
He did? Maybe.
It always comes in 10
oh,
minutes.
Oh, I just
before
got it too.
It comes in because it comes in 10 minutes before the hour.
Okay.
So that it
so
gives
then,
you an opportunity. So it's measuring the past hour. Have you moved around much in the past hour? And if you haven't, it gives you sort of 10 minutes to get up and do that before the hour is up, before it starts remeasuring the next hour.
Now, I've read somewhere that there are two different sensors, two different heart rate sensors. One is passive and one is active. So the passive mm-hmm. one is infrared, and it's constantly monitoring, kind of like a baseline. Is that correct?
So you're talking about the calorie. Basically, your calories are counted as active calories or
no,
just the resting calories, right?
No, I meant that. I mean, maybe that's how I should have interpreted what I read. But the way I interpreted it was, there's the green light things that pop on when you're doing active activity, and then there's the infrared that is basically on the entire time, and that gives it a sense of wrist contact, but it also gives it a kind of, it's akin to GPS versus Wi-Fi location in the phone. You know what I mean? So it's less accurate, but it gets a sense of what's going on. So it'll notice greater changes rather than the minute changes at the green light. It kind of seemed like that's what where it was going.
Because
if you look at the little heart rate widget, it says this is what your heart rate was 2 minutes ago, right? And I'm thinking, well, Jesus, it's doing that all the time. You'd think that the battery would run down. So maybe it's doing some more, I don't know.
Yeah, that I don't know. A couple other things, just getting back to the sort of teardown of the processor. It does have 512 megs of RAM, which we talked about last time. What's interesting is it uses static RAM instead of DRAM.
Oh.
And I don't know what the reason for that is or what the differences are from a technical standpoint, but it's SRAM,
is
not
it
DRAM.
But that's not to be confused with non-volatile RAM, right? NVRAM, where it doesn't require power to maintain the memory.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so what is static?
I don't know what static versus dynamic RAM. It's just that most of our devices have DRAM in them.
Yeah.
And the Apple Watch for some reason is using SRAM.
I wonder if it's a power consumption thing.
You would think so.
Yeah, probably. And then the other interesting thing is, Steve Trotten Smith noticed that in the software, the firmware in the Apple Watch sort of references the GPU with a PowerVR SGX 543 driver, which would be the same GPU that was in the A5 processor. So that's like the iPad 2 iPhone 4S GPU.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, that's a pretty serious GPU. You know, obviously, it's probably not the same component, but it's using the same sort of, I guess, driver instruction set. So
it can handle
similar.
Stuff, yeah.
It must be similar to that kind of performance. Is the theory?
Yeah. So I'm seeing SRAM is RAM that retains data bits in its memory as long as power is being supplied. Unlike DRAM, which stores its bits in cells consisting of a capacitor and a transistor. So SRAM does not have to be periodically refreshed.
Hmm.
So I guess the capacitor would be drained, whereas this, I don't know much about electronics, so don't email me. Basically,
yeah, well,
it seems like it requires less power.
I'd love a good sort of human explanation of the advantages of static RAM.
Absolutely.
In a device like the Apple Watch, you know, like, why did they make that design decision? I don't know.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. Let's see. Where else? Oh, do you want to talk about how Apple removed eBay from their featured apps list?
No, I didn't hear this one.
Yeah, so they I think they were even talked about during one or both of the keynotes. And it was one of those things I was really excited about because it'd be the one of the perfect things to have on your watch. If you're bidding on something, you want to know when it's getting close to the end.
Get alerts.
Or, yeah, you got to get all those alerts. And then you get the active notifications where you say, increase my bid. But they've been removed from that featured list. And I think it's because it's the only one of the apps that were on that list that have not come out yet for the watch.
Whoops.
And it's interesting to realize once you dig into this that the eBay app has not even been updated for the iPhone 6 yet. It's still giant. And I correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think they even have those dynamic up my bid smart notifications. They don't have the widget that was promised 2 years ago for iOS 8.
You know what I'm doing now?
What's that?
I'm going through my business cards because in my iOS group is
a developer from eBay,
a mobile architect.
Ooh, I like.
Can
that.
Maybe ask this guy.
You should ask him.
Ask him.
Yeah. What they're doing, like besides picking their nose at eBay. Don't say it that way. That'd be mean. But
unless they really are, and then it's probably not sanitary.
Thankfully the internet can't transmit.
We should have a meeting coming up in the next week or so. So I will. Hopefully he'll be there, and I will pin him down. Maybe we'll get an answer next show.
Yeah, I mean that's one of the things that
probably can't tell us, but
well, sure, yeah, he probably can't tell you that. But I was referring more generally to apps for the watch. It doesn't seem like I feel like there would have been more. I'm wanting more now.
I think I said this on the Mac show today. I think there's probably a lot of developers that are doing two things. One, I think they probably wanted to wait for the actual hardware to be available so that they could actually, you know, have the full experience of what sort of they were designing was going to be like on the actual device. Mm-hmm. And then more importantly, I think, you know, if I was a developer and I didn't have a really compelling way or reason to get my app with the current sort of limitations on the watch, I would say screw it and just let's wait till we actually have a full API and we can build a native app and do it right.
Like,
there's a lot of developers.
That's actually really smart.
Yeah. That seem to be just rushing something out. And I think that's why a lot of the early apps are substandard.
Yeah.
You know, they're just okay or even in some cases bad. There's very few that I've gone, this is awesome. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for those reasons, I think you need to have the device for one reason. And then two, just some of the limitations really make viable apps for some app, you know, some of the apps that exist, not really practical, you know, it's sort of like, and so you can see it where you have somebody who threw out an app and it's just totally out of left field. It doesn't make sense. It's not really a companion app. It's just doing one little stupid thing that you really don't need it for. Right. And you're just like, why did they even throw this on here? Well, they threw it on there so that they could say they had an Apple Watch app.
Like Amazon.
But, is Amazon's bad?
It's not bad. It just doesn't seem like it's very useful. I had it on there for a while because while the functionality worked, it didn't. So basically you open it and you have one button and it's a magnifying glass. You tap it and then it allows you to voice search for something and it gives you a couple of things based on that search. You can tap on it and order an Xbox One accidentally. And it doesn't seem that useful. It doesn't even have access to your wish list. So you can't throw things that you regularly order in there. Another thing is Yelp. Yelp is pretty useless for me. I think it may be useful for people who, for quote unquote foodies who like to just roll the dice and eat at a place that they've never been to. But it's difficult for example, if I want to figure out what the hours are for a particular, like the Thai place downtown is open at weird hours. And I just want to click it open and real fast search for it and figure out if they're open. It's just not going to happen on my watch. So I deleted that as well, even though what it did worked fairly well. It just didn't have a use case. But there are apps for sure that do work pretty well. I thought it was interesting. I was messing with Shazam, and it opens Shazam on your phone and uses the mic on your phone to ID the song. It's like a remote for song.
Oh, that's ID. An interesting way to do it.
Yeah.
Although if your phone's in your pocket.
Yeah, you got to wonder how long it works, how well it works.
Yeah. Mm.
So it's, yeah, I think that is definitely a good point that we may see much better apps once we get the full API going at WWDC. That and the fact that they want, the developers probably want the hardware in their hands, and I'm sure that most of the developers still don't have them. So I'm looking forward to it though. It's a neat journey to be on, for the watch to see as it grows as a platform, but that's not for everybody, of course.
Yeah. And for the rest of us, we'll just keep adding apps and removing them from our Apple watches pretty much daily.
Yeah. Adding and then very quickly removing. The only thing I wish is Apple would, maybe expand their Apple Watch app to make it easier to browse for new apps, because it's really just, you have featured and search, and that's not great. And I would like to mention with games, as far as games go, for example, they, developers can't even put custom animations. They can't do animations on the watch. They have to fake it with animated GIFs and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I was going to say, because, you know, one of my Trivia Crack, I think, is pretty good as a game on the Apple Watch. Again, I think I talked about this. It's not, you're not going to play a full game on there, but if you want to answer a couple questions real quick, you know, as you're getting coffee in the kitchen or something like that, which is what I've been doing, it does have a little animation on it. But I did notice it's kind of clunky and slow, because they have, like, this, you know, a spinner to get your category.
Yeah.
So it probably just triggers into an animated GIF.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Let's see. Let's talk about NatureBox, and then we'll get into some Apple Pay fun. So NatureBox is our second sponsor this week. Of course, they're at naturebox.com/TIOSS. And, you know, you're going to snack. And when you do, you want it to be worth it, of course. Something that's tasty and satisfying, but doesn't make you feel guilty afterwards. What you want are snacks from NatureBox. And I was thinking about it earlier today, what the way I would think about NatureBox, because sure, you can get a lot of these snacks from the store. Well, some of them, a lot of them are really unique, but if you find every once in a while, you'll find like a really cool seeming snack and like, ooh, those look really delicious. And then you look at the back at the label and you're like, this is totally artificial garbage, right? So it's like having your own personal on-demand grandma snack maker that just makes you delicious snacks that are only made with things that grandma would make. And she sends them to you as little care packages, like every month or however often you sign up for them. And of course, you can choose from over 100 healthy and crave-worthy options to be delivered right to your door. They're all made with zero artificial flavors, no artificial colors or sweeteners, 0 grams of trans fats, and no high fructose corn syrup. And they all taste amazing. Let's see here. The snacks that I got. Of course, I've talked about the nom-noms, the peanut butter nom-noms.
I was going to say, Michael just has all peanut butter nom-noms. It's just like every month. I wish.
No, it's bad, because I would just tear up the nom-noms. So I can't have them keep sending me nom-noms, because it'd be gone. Like,
you just open
day.
Michael's shelf and it's like pouring. And it's just all nom-noms, peanut butter nom-noms.
They're really good. They also have dark chocolate pretzel pops. They sent, I got these dark chocolate almonds. Those are awesome. So it's pretty low sugar, right? Because it's like the dark chocolate. So it's the on the more bitter side of chocolate, which is how I like chocolate. And it's got fresh, nice almonds in there. So you get your almonds, you get your chocolate. It's delicious. They also have the dark chocolate pretzel pops. You get the cashew power clusters. Toasted cheddar sticks. You got blueberry almonds. Those are Those are really good. So it's almonds with a dusting of delicious blueberry flavor. I don't know what they do, but they're delicious. And of course, again, they're no artificial stuff. So however grandma would do it, that's how they do it. They have some new
with
snacks.
Magic.
Yeah, with magic grandma magic. They have new snacks, mini Belgian waffles, which sound incredible. Strawberry lemonade fruit stars. Those also sound incredible. And sweet and salty nut medley, which, hey, you want your sweet, you want your salty, get it in a medley. And they got that. They got you covered. And I should say that they, not only do they have both sweet and savory snacks there to choose from, so it's not just like sweet snacks. You can also get pretzels and those sorts of things. If you want, they have a bunch of filters too. So you can say, hey, I'm vegan or I'm vegetarian or I have a gluten allergy or I can't have dairy. And it's like, okay, that's cool. We'll only send you these snacks. And it just sends you what you want. So go ahead, try them out there at naturebox.com/TIOSS. And you'll get a free box of snacks when you use that URL. So, I mean, I don't know what you're waiting for. If you want some free snacks that are delicious, just sent to your door, just do that. naturebox.com/TIOSS. And so, yeah. We thank NatureBox for their support of the iOS show. Oh yeah, Apple Pay. So this news is near and dear to my heart that Apple has gotten 24 more participating issuers in the United States, which includes Bancorp, aka Simple. So now I can use my fancy Simple card. And actually, now that I think about it, I think I could probably use my PayPal card too. Even try that, because I have Simple as my like bank, and Chase I just have a credit card with. So I've just been using Chase, and that's kind of a pain because I don't like using credit all the time. But that was the only way I could use Apple Pay. So now I would imagine PayPal would work as well. But that's pretty cool. I'm excited about that. I haven't actually gotten to use it with Simple yet, but. It's interesting because I have tried using it and it didn't work. So there's an Albertsons, I guess now, what is it called? What's it called, Adam? It's a weird name.
Oh, I don't remember. It's not every Albertsons either.
Well,
you had told me that.
Yeah, I forget. Hagen? Yeah, it's Hagen.
They got bought by it. They bought up a bunch of different grocery store locations, but
yeah.
They didn't.
Yeah. So I went there and I was kind of concerned at first that they had disabled Apple Pay. But I guess they didn't. I think it was just a specific, terminal, but
they were very misleading with that because initially everything they said sounded like they just killed Apple Pay.
No, you're talking about, I think,
oh, wait, that's Home Depot.
Yeah. You're talking about Home
Never
Depot,
mind.
Yeah.
Never mind.
No, I mean, we can talk about Home Depot because it rolls into this, but I was going to say just the fact that when you run into a situation where it doesn't work, you're way, way less inclined, especially with a new gadget like the watch, right? So like, oh, your Apple Watch guy, suddenly you're trying to pay with your Apple Watch, and it goes from that's way cool right down to the opposite end of the spectrum of your thing doesn't work. That's stupid. You're holding up the line.
You're a douche.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring that up because I was thinking about that just this week. And that's going to be Apple's biggest problem now with Apple Pay is I've started to not even want to try to use it because it's just so frustrating to like be standing there and, you know, possibly holding up the line or... And there's also those instances where I've had those instances now where it does this weird thing where you use Apple Pay on my phone, it gives me the check mark and says done, but it never, the terminal never beeped, you know? And
yeah.
So I've learned now you got to wait for the terminal to do its little beep. If you don't hear that, despite what the stupid, you know, Apple Pay interface says, it didn't take. And I also had a weird thing with my watch one time where the watch sort of didn't stay on. Like it went to sleep and I had to like flip it around and wake it back up again, which I thought it wasn't supposed to do, but
it doesn't usually do that.
Error.
It might've been a situation where, I would imagine it would go to sleep after a minute or two. Did you like activate it in preparation?
No, right before I flipped it over.
Oh, okay.
And it was weird. It's just like, oh, it didn't go. And then I flipped it back over and the screen was asleep. And it was like, I had to tap the button again and it came right back up to Apple Pay and then it went through. But no, but you're getting back to your original point. They are reaching that sort of level of, if they don't get in more locations and they don't get at more terminals, I'm thinking they're going to have a hard time getting people to continue to use the service, because it's sort of like, you don't know if it's going to work or not. And that's exactly right. What you're saying is exactly right. At that point, I'd rather just pull my card out because I know that's going to work and I'm not going to, you know, look like a jerk.
Yeah. Well, yeah. It would be more of a marketing problem for them. If it's the
signage thing.
Yeah. Once it says Apple Pay, you're pretty confident that it's going to work. And if it says Apple Pay on the register, which it does at this Hagen store.
Oh, cool. I haven't seen a single location. I don't shop at Whole Foods. If I did, I think they have signage.
They do.
Yes, they do. They have big signs.
Yeah, but I haven't found another place that takes Apple Pay. Like, I went to Walgreens. There was no indication anywhere, not on the terminal, not on the door, not on anywhere. And they're like one of the official, like Apple should be requiring every one of those people that signed up to be in that list, you know, like on that slide. Like, you got to put signage up in your stores. I'm sorry.
You know, this just goes back to the whole problem that has kept us from having widespread wireless payment support everywhere. And it's apathy at the retail level.
Yeah. Yeah. I got my kit. Did I tell you guys? I got my Apple Pay stickers.
Why? Do you accept that at your house?
No, but I wanted to see, because they had that page you could go to get your stickers. Like, Apple has made it really easy for retailers and I guess even non-retailers to get stickers, because I just like filled out the form. I'm like, yeah, I want some Apple Pay signage. So I have one for my register and one for my front door, and it's pretty cool.
Now all you need is a register to go
in
the front door.
It came in a nice kit, even with like a little tool, like a little squeegee tool for like, you know, getting the bubbles out.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So they need, but it's almost like they probably should figure out where all the retailers are and just automatically mail them the stickers. Like, don't even get them to ask. Just send them a care package. And I bet you a lot of the locations would just put them up.
Yeah, I agree. Well, they do have that. They say that, okay, if you see the Apple Pay sticker, that's one thing. You're totally going to know that you can do your Apple Pay there. But they also have, what do we call it? The doink icon or the donk icon?
Yes.
You called it the Wi-Fi egg, I think.
Yeah, the Wi-Fi egg. Yeah, totally.
But even that doesn't always work, because like you were saying,
yes,
it's like Home Depot came out this week, and I've been using my Apple Pay at Home Depot. As a matter of fact, it totally saved me one time, because I had gone to Home Depot. I got like $400 worth of home improvement stuff in my cart or whatever and got up to the front
and realized credit card.
I didn't have my credit card with me. I forgot my wallet at home. And I'm like, oh, shh, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, well, good news is I have my phone and they'll take Apple Pay.
Right.
And I did it. And then like the woman's like, I've never seen anybody do that before. That was amazing. And it's like, yeah, it's really cool. Save my bacon. So, but the thing is I think it was the kind of thing where they had the right terminals, but they never officially sort of said they supported it or enabled support. So yeah, it was just sort of just working because the NFC was working.
Right. So. Now it's a really strange story because, so the first story that came out was based on a post from a guy on Reddit, right? And they were saying that they're quietly dropping Apple Pay and maybe headed toward only taking PayPal.
Right.
Right. And that was based upon...
Because they've always taken PayPal.
Have
there
they?
Too.
I didn't realize that. That's so weird. How do you pay with PayPal?
You put in your email address and your
which
password,
is funny because... Because their terminals, they don't allow special characters like a dash.
I think I had that problem too. I think you're right, because I think another time, same kind of situation before they did Apple Pay, I forgot my wallet. And I'm like, oh, I can use my PayPal.
That is totally insane.
But, yeah, and I tried to do it once, and I couldn't. So I was like, oop, not
because I had
anything.
A secure password. I think you're right. I think I ran into something like that, and I ended up having to leave all my stuff right there and then walk out. Talk about looking like a jerk too with people behind you. It's like...
yeah.
trying to enter your PayPal account information.
God, yeah. You might as well just take your credit card out. There's no way you're going to type your PayPal email and password.
Well, I think I had to get my phone out because I don't know my PayPal password because it's in 1Password.
Exactly.
So I got the phone out and I'm doing
the
reveal.
Special characters.
24 characters with special characters.
And you're like, I give up. I'm sorry, everyone.
Just left everything at the...
Yeah.
You know, in the little bin area.
Right. Well,
done.
Thankfully, that is... It doesn't seem to be the case. And this, the story, the follow up to that came out maybe 6 hours later. I think a lot of people think that the internet had an effect on this. I'm not entirely sure. I think it was just miscommunication between divisions. But they officially announced that they are going to support Apple Pay following a retail system upgrade. But again, it doesn't make really a lot of sense if they're going to start disabling them, even though the terminals already work. So maybe there are some terminals at some stores that work and some stores that don't have them.
Yes, I think that's more the thing. I think it's the same experience like you had. I think, you know, maybe, you know, some stores already had the upgraded NFC terminals and maybe some don't. And so it's like not a universal thing that every... Because they had not officially announced support for Apple Pay. Now they have, you know, as of this week, and they're saying they're going to enable it at, you know, all 2,000 locations in the U.S. So, and they're going to actually now be the biggest, I think, retail supporter of Apple Pay in that Apple has.
Which is pretty cool. All right, so what I need to do, and I just haven't had time, is swing by my Best Buy. No, Home Depot. Home Depot, where I have made Apple Pay purchases and see if I can still do it.
Mm-hmm. I need to do the same thing. And then you tipped off the other story, which is even bigger news in my opinion, is that Best Buy is gonna be taking Apple Pay.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Yeah.
So I guess that maybe we got some cross signals from this whole ordeal. Maybe it was Home Depot never officially supported it, and that's what
Correct.
Customer service was reflecting, and perhaps the store at which he was trying to use Apple Pay, perhaps those terminals just didn't work for NFC payments, because as I've experienced, sometimes the terminals will take your card, but for some reason the NFC doesn't work, and it says Apple Pay right there.
And to be clear about what I'm saying by they never officially supported it, I believe they were in the original list of Apple Pay, like we are going to support Apple Pay.
But they just haven't.
But I don't think they ever did their official rollout. I think, you know, like a number of other retailers on that list, you know, they haven't done the, yes, we've got the branding, we've got the logos, we're actually taking it.
Yeah,
because I would talk to people at Home Depot and they weren't even aware that they were taking it, like people at the register.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think corporately they didn't really officially roll it out yet, so, even though they were on the list. And so now what they're saying is we're getting all new system in place that's going to have full support for Apple Pay. And it's, you know, that's the official rollout. Just the fact that they had terminals that took NFC and worked was just a byproduct of they just happened to have those in, you know, many of the locations.
That was just lucky happenstance, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that there are two options for Home Depot at this point. One, they leave the ones that take NFC payments, they just leave them on and wait until all their stores have the NFC terminals, and then they officially announce that they have Apple Pay. Or if they want to be crazy controlling about it, they turn NFC off at all the Home Depots that have them already, get the correct terminals in there for all the stores, and then officially turn it on with one giant switch kind of thing. And
again,
it's not
I don't
clear
think it's clear
doing.
That they were turning things off. Right. My guess is that somebody was, you know, this Reddit person was probably going to a specific Home Depot that had terminals that were already upgraded that had NFC support, and then likely ended up somewhere in one line or at one store that just didn't.
Right, and then he contacted
made the leap that,
customer
oh, they're
service.
Turning it off.
Exactly.
Well, they also got a comment from Home Depot, and Home Depot said, no, we don't support Apple Pay, and the way they worded their response, it sounded like Apple Pay just simply was being blocked.
Right. It sounded like what they're doing at Rite Aid.
Okay, well, so we need to do our due diligence. I need to go back to Home Depot and see if the Home Depots that I've been going to, where I have used Apple Pay several times, suddenly can't take Apple Pay.
Yeah, go buy some gum or something. Do they sell gum at Home Depot?
I don't know. There's two things I want to really try my Apple Pay with that I'm frustrated aren't out there yet. One is Chevron.
Yeah.
I want to pay at the pump and see how that works. I don't know what's taken so long for them to roll that out there.
Me too.
I also want to see, I want to use it at a vending machine.
Oh, yeah.
Has anybody seen one of these vending machines that takes
it? I have not.
I haven't either.
There are some at my school. So there are a couple of soda machines and a couple snack machines next to each other. The soda machines seem to have the NFC, but the snack machines didn't have the little Wi-Fi egg on them, so I didn't try. I would imagine they would update it if those things truly, truly had those. But they had credit card readers, so maybe I should give it a try. I don't drink soda, so I'd be wasting my money at the soda machines, but I don't know. I might
just get a water, even though it's the cruddy Dasani or whatever, but...
Yeah.
Don't they add sodium to that?
I don't know.
It's electrolytes.
Weird, but yeah, I think they
it's filtered tap water from wherever they get it from. You know, it's not anything special.
So. Yeah, flavored with salt.
Yeah, salt is good for you, though. 2 points.
So
I guess
they say.
Okay, let's see. Oh, so according to the New York Times, the next generation remote for the Apple TV, they believe Apple is working on a next gen remote, and it will have a touchpad for scrolling. And all the stories I've seen about this have been oddly positive about this idea, but I think
it's
a terrible idea.
I'm not positive about this at all.
Yeah, I hate
either.
Scrolling with
it works like the remote app on my iPhone,
yeah,
which is essentially simulating me being very drunk. I don't want it. I mean, and especially considering at that point, you can't actually feel where the buttons are. That's one of the things I like about Apple's slim little metal remote. If I'm using it, I don't have to even look at it. I can just feel where everything is.
Yeah. If anything, the only thing that could make that remote better is like putting some kind of, like if you whistle for it, it beeps so you can find it again.
God.
Or putting a chain on it. I don't know. Because I constantly
lose
it. That
is the worst part of that remote, right? Those things get lost like...
Instantly.
Ugh, so tiny.
You use it, 2 minutes later, where the hell is it? It's like across the house somehow.
Well, they're so thin, they get picked up by the air currents.
Yeah, they just blow around in the wind.
Yeah.
I want the Martin Hajek version.
What's that?
With the screen. It looks kind of like, you remember the long
slim
Thanos?
Oh, yeah. We talked about this before. It looks gorgeous. Like almost like an iPhone, but if its only feature was to be a remote.
Yeah,
but again, you got to wonder. Well, first, you don't get the tactile feedback, which I absolutely love.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get the drunk scrolling.
Yeah, this is a classic case of if it ain't broke, why are we fixing it?
Again, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
But yeah. That kind of
the only thing
they
need to do is just make it bigger. Like, can we just make the remote like
just add
big
more
so it doesn't get lost?
More bare aluminum to it.
Yeah.
Have you ever even had to replace the battery? Well, okay, assuming you've been able to keep a hold of one of Apple's remotes long enough, have you ever even had to replace a battery?
Yeah, that's pretty easy to do, I think.
Well, of course, it's very easy to do, but I've been using the same remote for 3 years, maybe 4 years, and I still haven't had to change the battery.
Oh, I say, yeah. I mean, yeah, no, I don't have to replace the battery, but if you did, it's...
It'd be really easy to do. You just don't have to do it.
Yeah, that is nice. True. I like that. Uh-oh. You're leaving us, Adam.
What'd I do?
Your Skype quality's just going away.
Seriously?
Yeah, Skype kind of took a dirt nap on you.
Yeah, you just suddenly just turned into a...
I'm not even on Wi-Fi. Am I coming back?
Maybe.
Some.
Hopefully. We'll just roll with it.
You want to hang up and call back?
Sure. Why not? I don't think he had a choice. I think he just did it. Hello?
Hello.
You sound a little better now.
Yeah, a
it's
little
really
better.
Weird. I mean, I'm literally on a gigabit Ethernet connection.
Yeah, you started crapping out on Leo's show, too. Did you know that?
that makes sense.
Maybe you're saying things that your ISP doesn't like. So you're being punished.
Yeah, maybe. Okay, so let's move on. The 12.9-inch rumored iPad Pro that may or may not exist anymore because the new MacBook. But according to Apple Insider, and they usually get things, they have some good sources, right? They've been around for a long time. So they're thinking it will have NFC, a Bluetooth stylus, which we've kind of talked about a little before. Force touch makes sense, and USB-C. Now the funny thing about this is if you subtract the NFC part, it sounds exactly like the current MacBook, right?
Yeah. but you know, with the MacBook out, I'm less and less convinced that the iPad Pro is coming anytime soon. Because that MacBook just feels like it's hitting that sweet spot between an iPad and regular Apple laptop.
Yeah, but you don't get the touch screen, right? And I think for some people, you just really want the touch screen. You get drawing capabilities, you get the stylus, so you can do a lot more stuff on there. And as we talked about before, Apple probably needs to work on some sort of hybrid OS where you're integrating parts of OS X and iOS to make it more compelling as a device.
I don't like that idea at all.
Well, I'd make iOS more compelling in a larger form factor with a stylus. I don't know if it would be a hybrid necessarily of OS X and iOS, but they say that the Bluetooth stylus would be pretty good. They don't know what the NFC chip would do because it's unlikely that they're going to allow Apple Pay in your big ass iPad. But I would imagine that maybe has something more to do with the stylus, but I guess the big question is, so this thing's going to have USB-C. Is it going to have a Lightning connector still? So some people say, yes, we're going to have both. Some people say it's just going to be USB-C. And I guess based on some mockups, they say the mockups have both. But it doesn't seem very Apple.
No, it doesn't.
And it would really kind of upset me if it seemed like they were switching from Lightning to USB-C in the iOS devices in general, because we already went through that whole like 30-pin to Lightning situation, and they like promised us that they weren't going to do that again for a while, but maybe it's been a while for them. I guess the only question is, how does the USB-C connector compare in size to the Lightning connector? How much bigger is it? So would it be feasible to replace the Lightning connectors in iPhones with USB-C? Does anybody know?
I don't know. I think the USB-C connector is enough larger, bigger enough.
Biggerer.
Biggerer. To the point that it could be an issue for overall device size, which is part of the reason why Apple went to the Lightning connector, because it's so small and it allowed them to make the devices so much thinner.
Yeah. And does USB-C allow for audio pass through the direct line in out? Because I know it does stuff like display and...
I would assume it does.
Yeah, it seems like that kind of... fancy interface. So I don't know. It's, I guess we'll have to wait and see if this iPad Pro thing ever materializes. That's the only thing we can do, I guess. Do we want to talk about, AppleBot? Cause this is, something that I hadn't heard of before until Apple, officially announced it on a page, like a support page. So I guess there had been some people who noticed a thing called AppleBot originating on Apple's IP block, because they have the 17.000 block. And there's a thing called AppleBot roaming around the internet, and they officially announced that it's for improving Siri and Spotlight suggestions. So it's a web crawler, basically, and it follows instructions from your robots.txt file, as you would hope it would. Some people have speculated about Apple perhaps making a search engine. I don't know about that.
Okay, so this is a debate that I've had going on, well, pretty much all week with Brian Chaffin.
Okay.
And he says, yeah, this is Apple's big step into going head-to-head with Google on internet search.
Just like payback, maybe this was in Steve Jobs' will to like get him. Get him back for what they did to us.
Yeah. So, so my take is that Apple's already done their runaround, which is they're taking the search results that Google and Bing are providing and then branding them with their own Spotlight interface. And so now they can just supplement that or enhance that result set with their own data that they're collecting. And then it has the nice side benefit of finding new words and phrases that Siri needs to understand.
Yeah, that makes infinitely more sense to me.
Now, it doesn't mean that at some point Apple isn't going to go full on, here's our web page for internet searching, but I don't see that happening anytime soon.
Yeah. I think Adam's restarting his router, so...
Oh, that's exciting.
I'm not because, well, I don't know if you guys care, but I'm getting massive send packet loss.
Yeah, how about you restart your router and we'll talk about... We'll do Jeff's pick and then hopefully you'll be back.
Just up the backup recording. That's all. I'll be back.
Okay, cool.
We'll miss you while you're gone.
Yeah, hopefully we needed the backup recording last week for a little bit, but GarageBand is behaving itself. I don't know if I want to talk about the music service though, because that... It doesn't seem like anybody understands what's going on with Apple's music service right now.
Well, there's so little that's really known. I mean, it's all rumor and speculation.
Pure rumor and speculation. I think we should just leave it for when we know actual things. There's the AppleBot. And unless there's anything else to talk about, I think we'll do our picks now.
All right.
Just as long as you promise to not do my pick. Because my pick is an Apple Watch game. Is yours a game that works on the Apple Watch?
It is, no. Okay. No. Apple Watch gaming, at least for right now, holds absolutely no interest for me. So you are totally safe.
Cool. Okay.
All right. So my pick is something I've picked in the past, but I'm picking it now because of Apple Watch compatibility. And this is Workflow. So Workflow is updated so that it now includes an Apple Watch app, which means that from your wrist, you can now run workflows,
which is
actually surprisingly cool. So if you've created your own workflows, then you can run them from your Apple Watch. But if you haven't, that's okay. Just go look at the gallery that shows up on your Apple Watch, and there's all kinds of stuff you can do. So for people that don't know what workflow is, it's sort of like Apple Script for the iPhone and iPad, in that it lets you automate functions and actions, and you can pick things that wouldn't otherwise go directly together and use workflow as the tool to bring them together and let you do whatever it is. So a real simple example would be you take a series of photographs and then have them auto-stitch together into a GIF or GIF, whichever you prefer, and then automatically send them wherever it is you want them to go, an email, send it to Twitter, or whatever. And you can do things that are far more functional, but that's just an easy example. And now you can do that from your Apple Watch. You can't make workflows on your Apple Watch, but you can run them from there.
So I still haven't gotten this thing. I know a lot of people talk about it. What convince me? Why do I need workflow? I haven't seen anything that's useful for me.
All right. Let's say that you're doing stuff where you're grabbing a lot of images, but you know, like you're just snapping a bunch of photos and you need them to immediately be on your computer. So you can be grabbing photos and via AirDrop, having them go directly to your computer as you're taking them. So that's an example. You can tie this in with reminders.
Okay.
So you can have workflow creating tasks for you that you need to do automatically, which is kind of nice. Let's see, what else? You can automate content that's going to your social networks with workflow.
Huh.
So that you know, there's that too. There's a ton of stuff you can do.
Okay, I should check it out.
Yeah, you should check it out, because the things that you can link together and make happen on, I love it on my iPad. That's where I use it most. It's amazing. It's like if you took Automator off your Mac and put it on your iPad or iPhone.
Yeah, I like Automator.
Yeah, think of it that way. It's like Automator for your iPad.
All right, cool.
And it's like $3. It's ridiculously inexpensive.
Yep, $3. Adam, you're back.
It's debatable.
You sound much better. So let's.
Well, it's probably not going to last.
Okay. Well, what's your pick? As long as it's not an Apple Watch game that I'm picking.
I'm going to pick what I picked on the Mac show earlier today, which is this awesome app. It's part of the new iPad campaign that Apple's been running. Everything on iPad, or I can't remember the name of the campaign that launched this week. Do you remember what it's called, Jeff?
Everything is super duper with iPad! Exclamation yay!
Yeah,
change everything.
Everything
is
changes.
Is that really what it's called?
Everything changes with iPad.
Yeah. Yes. So it's they're a pair of apps from a company called Thix, THIX, and one is called Chemist, and the other is called Machinist. And what it is it's the Chemist is a virtual chemistry lab. So you've got beakers and chemicals and Bunsen burners and all these sorts of things. And you can pull them out and you can mix chemicals together and do chemistry experiments. And then Machinist is like batteries and switches and dials and different controls. So you can set up lights and lighting. And what's kind of cool about Machinist is you actually have some objects that take advantage of the sensors that are in your iPad. So these are both iPad apps, iPad only. But so you can get like a motion switch and an accelerometer switch or a sound resistance switch, those sorts of things. So they have like an example machine that they built that is like an iPad theft detector. So if you turn that on and then move the iPad, it'll sound an alarm sort of thing. So those are the kinds of things you can build in that. The chemistry one is cool. If I knew chemistry, it would be, I think, more fun because I know how to actually make things. Like, I'm pretty sure, and this came up on the Mac show as well, I'm pretty sure if you knew what you were doing, you could create some really high-quality blue meth.
Oh, jeez.
God, I was not thinking. I was thinking you could make some aspirin.
You could.
With some acetic acid.
And so they're cool apps. About my only complaint about them is I think I don't know where the developer is. I want to say I think the developer's in Japan or something like that. I'm not sure that English is the first language. Everything is visual in terms of the UI, but there's no. You don't know what you're doing. You know, it's like where to click. When you launch each one of these apps, you basically have a blank screen with these very small controls on your iPad. And, you know, then when you tap on them, things sort of slide down and then you get all your, you know, little jars of chemicals, for example. And they're separated into solids and liquids and gases. And then you can kind of drag things out and then put them on the desktop. But sometimes there's little buggy elements to it, but visually it's kind of cool. And, just in terms of what you can do with it, it's really, really neat. With the chemistry one, I was just saying earlier, my basic thing is just to figure out how to blow stuff up. Right? How to make reactions that'll blow stuff up. So sodium and water is a good, easy one if you want to just like one. Break a beaker or something like
potassium
that.
Potassium as well.
Yeah.
Any of those first period.
Yeah, but what I really want to do is figure out how to do something where it's like a slow buildup, so where I can mix a couple things and then it just sort of slowly like starts making a reaction where it gets hotter and hotter and hotter or something until it then explodes.
Try cesium. Do you get access to cesium?
Sure.
Or francium. I think any of those. The more reactive, more the further down you go the table, the more reactive. So you get
better right. Yeah, explosions. But I want less reactive. I want to figure out how to put together a mixture where, you know, maybe I apply a little heat or a little cold, and then eventually it sort of builds up, you know, reaction after a reaction. And it does when it starts doing reactions, it gives you a running list of, you know, what sort of what's happening, what's combining, and what's being given off. Like I said, I think scientifically, if you were a real chemist, you'd be totally into this thing, because I think it is a full, like, actual chemistry simulation sort of thing. So you can control heat and temperature and sort of monitor all those things. And you do have tubes and stoppers. And so you could set up all kinds of distillations, and, you know, you have pipettes and glass rods. And the one thing that's not there that my wife was a little bummed about is there's not a stir bar for some reason.
Oh, so. You got to have a stir bar. Huh. Well, I guess yeah. You can dip your virtual finger in there and just stir it with your finger.
Well, you have a glass rod, so you got to kind of do it manually, but they don't have like a little machine. What but about, they do have like a Bunsen burner.
What about something for titrating?
Yes.
Okay. Oh, cool.
Got all that stuff. So, chemist and machinist, I think they're $4.99 individually, or they come as a bundle, which is what I got for $7.99.
Cool. So we'll go, I'll just throw that in there as the, so it's the Fix bundle, I guess.
Lab bundle or something like that, I think it's called.
Yeah, Fix Virtual Labs. It's the bundle. Okay, cool. Let me see here. Bloop. Okay, cool. So my pick this week is it's a game, as I've mentioned, for the Apple Watch called Lifeline. And it's not just for the Apple Watch, mind you. It's for the iPhone as well. And trust me, I was not super excited about the idea of a game on my watch, because it's my watch and I just, you know, I don't want to hold my arm up that long. And I didn't have a good experience with Trivia Crack.
I like that one.
And I don't play a lot of games. I just don't play a lot of games unless the story pulls me in. And that is the story. That's how it works with Lifeline. So it's really a choose your own adventure game. So it's purely text-based. And the premise is you are contacted by this person who's just crash landed on another planet. And somehow you stumble upon his transmission, his or hers, the gender is not specific actually. And he's like, hey, who's, you know, what's going on? You got to help me. And you kind of help him through all these different things to try and get him to basically get rescued. And a lot of crazy things happen, but it's like those old, choose your own adventure books where he's like, oh, well, I have this choice. Should I sleep out by the, should I sleep inside the ship, even though it's busted in two and it's going to be really cold? Or should I sleep by the engines, the reactor for the engines? Cause it's nice and warm by the reactor, but I don't know if I'm going to get too much radiation and die. So go research and tell me if this is too much radiation, and let me know. And then you choose. That's cool. It's so neat, and it works perfectly on the Apple Watch. And of course, because it's on your phone as well, you can jump back and forth. And but yeah, it's tons and tons of fun. I really, really enjoyed it. So it's $3, well spent. Probably the best Apple Watch game that you can get right now.
That's what I've heard.
Yeah, go get it. It's 100% worth it. I love it. Lifeline, $3. And if you don't have an Apple Watch, like I said, it's on your phone too, so you can, and actually on the iPad as well. So it's 100% universal for all of the Apple stuffs. So check it out.
Cool.
Yep, yep. Okay, so with that, you can find all of our picks in the show notes at theiosshow.com. Tell a friend about the show. We appreciate that. And review the show on iTunes. If you haven't done that yet, just go, you know, put a little star rating, maybe a couple word review. Let us know. We always appreciate that. That helps the show a lot. Feedback at theiosshow.com is where you can email us. And of course, our sponsors this week are Lynda at lynda.com/tios for a 10-day free trial at Lynda. and NatureBox at naturebox.com/tios, and you get a free box of delicious snacks. And advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, macobserver.com, at ggamet on Twitter, and the TMO Daily Observations podcast.
And it's always awesome to be here.
It's awesome to have you. And Adam Christensen, it's awesome to have Adam as well. He's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, and at MacCast on Twitter.
Finally.
Wow. So he's been reduced to a bump. But you can find Adam all over the place. He's MacCast pretty much everywhere. He's on Appler. Jeff's on Appler. I'm on Appler. And yeah, I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter, and you can find me getapplr.com/Michael and see all the apps that I use and enjoy. And with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this?
The stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No.
Yuck.
No. Who wants a stylus?
Stylus.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them.
Yuck.
No. 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 No.
Yuck.
No.
Yuck, yuck,
no.
No.
You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them.